Welcome to Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig. I'm Kevin Harris. Today we're going to have a conversation about contending with Christianity's critics, answering new atheists and other objectors, a book edited by Dr. Craig and co-edited with Dr. Paul Copan. Bill, talk a little bit about Dr. Copan.
Paul was actually one of my students, Kevin. I don't know if you are aware of that. When I taught at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School between, about 1980 and 1986, Paul passed through Trinity as a student, took apologetics from me, and then went on to do pastoral work in the Presbyterian Church before taking a doctorate himself at Marquette University in philosophy, and has since gone on to become a quite good philosopher and is now teaching at West Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida. And Paul and I have cooperated in a number of books together, editing essays or debates, and this is the latest thing that we've done.
I got to tell you, he is something. And where does he excel? He excels at the moral argument, I believe.
Yes, right? That's one of his areas of specialization, is the moral argument. What Paul is especially good at, in a way that few other Christian philosophers are, is that he really knows biblical history and culture well. He has an admirable familiarity with commentaries on the Bible. So if you would want to know something about the background of the ancient Near East, for example, with respect to the Levitical laws, say, in the Old Testament, or the invasion of Canaan, Paul really, really knows that sort of historical background well. And he also knows the range of interpretations of various biblical passages and doctrines that are offered by commentators today. So he's very, very good at integrating what I guess I would call biblical theology with philosophical theology.
Contending with Christianity's Critics is available. You can go to reasonablefaith.org. Let's talk about section one. There is part one on the existence of God, and you open up the chapter with Dawkins' delusion. Uh-huh. And this evaluate Richard Dawkins' arguments from his book, The God Delusion.
That's correct. The focus of my brief essay in this book is what Dawkins calls the central argument of my book, and that is that there cannot exist a designer of the cosmos, because that simply raises the further question, who designed the designer? And so in this essay, I respond to that argument.
James Daniel Sinclair talks about at home in the multiverse, and the multiverse often comes up, that there are many universes, and this is just one of many Big Bangs.
Yes, in fact, this is the solution to which Dawkins adverts to explain away the argument for design from fine-tuning of the universe, the idea that we live in a multiverse or a world ensemble of universes. And Jim Sinclair works in cosmology, is very conversant with current cosmology, and so offers a refutation of this attempt to avert the force of the fine-tuning argument through appeal to a multiverse.
Victor Reppert, the argument from reason.
This is a kind of transcendental argument that Vic Reppert defends. It's the idea that rationality and the mental itself, that is the intentionality, thinking about things, having mental causes of effects, that itself requires some sort of ultimate mind or source behind the cosmos. And that if scientific naturalism is true, it's really self-refuting, because then one's mental faculties and thought processes would be causally impotent. They would just be, at best, a kind of epiphenomenon, as it's called, a sort of spin-off of biological processes in the brain that don't really do anything themselves and don't have any causal effects. So that naturalism is self-defeating. It undermines its own rational credentials by its view of the self and the mental life.
Do I understand that Alvin Plantinga has something similar along these lines?
Yes, yes. Plantinga has developed this argument against naturalism in great detail, and Reppert offers another version of that. He studied C.S. Lewis, who had a similar sort of argument from reason for the existence of God or against naturalism, and Reppert takes off on what he calls the argument from reason.
Chapter 4 is very fresh and very cutting edge in that there's been so much in the news lately that we are hardwired to believe in God, that there's a God gene, a God portion of the brain. Michael J. Murray takes this on.
Michael Murray is a terrific Christian philosopher who has familiarized himself with brain science and current cognitive psychology. And he shows about 5 different views that cognitive psychologists have taken with regard to belief in God. What some of these people believe is that far from being a sort of Freudian projection of an infantile and neurotic consciousness, belief in God may be actually hardwired into the human brain so that it comes naturally to us to believe in God, even in cultures and societies that have no overt sort of Christian tradition. And Murray assesses the evidence for this claim, but then also assesses that if the claim is true, what significance would this have for theism? And he thinks, in fact, that God may have hardwired us to believe in him, that this would fit very much in line with Alvin Plantinga's Reformed epistemology, which says that God has constructed our cognitive mechanisms so that when they function properly, we automatically and immediately form the belief that God exists, and that to fail to believe in God is therefore a symptom of cognitive dysfunction. That's Plantinga's view. And Michael Murray points out that this accords very well with some of the current theories in brain science and cognitive psychology.
Well, Bill, I've looked at many articles in the popular press on this, and they all point toward that God doesn't really exist. This is a trick of the brain.
Yes, and Murray, I think, just explodes that superficial take on these theories. His is a very, very nuanced and careful discussion of what the evidence really says and then what significance it would have.
Chapter 5 was written by Mark D. Linville, a guy who I have just really come to like. On the moral argument and everything, he takes on the moral poverty of evolutionary naturalism.
Yes. Mark also was one of my students at Trinity. It's so gratifying when you see former students go on and become fine Christian philosophers themselves. And I think of all of the people writing on the moral argument today, I would think Mark Linville is really right at the top. And that was why J.P. Moreland and I tapped him to do the argument in the Blackwell Companion for Natural Theology.
Which is also available at reasonablefaith.org,
it is.
By the way.
And he wrote the chapter on the moral argument there. And here he presents a layperson's version of the moral argument, showing that if scientific naturalism is true, we have no reason to trust our moral sense when it tells us that certain things are right and others are wrong, that we ought to do certain things and ought to refrain from others. He argues that on naturalism, again, naturalism defeats itself. It would point out that these oughts or the sense of ought is something for which we have no objective basis.
Rounding out part one of contending with Christianity's critics is Gregory E. Gansel, and he evaluates Dawkins' best argument against God's existence. Is this one similar to your chapter?
No, Greg Gansel's chapter is different from mine. What I attack is what Dawkins calls the central argument of his book, which is the sort of who designed the designer argument. What Greg does in his chapter is take a very sympathetic view of Dawkins' book and tries to reconstruct what he would take to be Dawkins' best argument. It's not one that Dawkins offers explicitly, but it's how a sympathetic reader would reconstruct Dawkins' case to make it into a good argument. And then Greg evaluates that and tries to show that even though certain phenomena that Dawkins appeals to do make God's non-existence more likely, that these are simply outweighed by other factors which make God's existence on balance more likely.
We'll look at part two next time. It's the Jesus of history. It takes on the critics of Christ and everything from his existence to his claims and so on. And then the coherence of Christian doctrine, which brings up common questions against, is Christianity even coherent? Is it self-contradictory? Is theism coherent or is it contradictory or irrational and so on? These are really some current issues. I'm sure that was part of the thought process of putting this book together.
These essays, Kevin, actually flow out of the annual conference that's put on by the Evangelical Philosophical Society. Every year, in connection with our annual scholarly meeting, we hold a concurrent conference in a local church in the city we're meeting in which we give lay people training in the defense of the faith. And all of these papers flow out of those lay conferences. So these are absolutely cutting edge essays on current thought. And they're cast at a lay level so that ordinary folks can understand them. But they are fresh, they're up to date, they're cutting edge. So that is definitely part of the plan behind this sort of program.
Dr. Craig, the preface of the book really addresses an issue, and that is distinguishing between good arguments and dealing with arguments, and then dealing with people who are just angry and sarcastic and combative. Because we find on the internet and among the so-called new atheism, people who are just mad. And that doesn't take a lot of homework. That just takes patience,
yes.
Quite often. But then there are others who are scholarly, and they're going to launch argumentation against the Christian faith. And so we have two things, it seems, to deal with here.
Very much so. And it's not merely anger, too, Kevin. I believe a lot of these people are hurting, that there's some real emotional scars and pain, especially from folks who have come out of Christian backgrounds and have left it and find themselves carrying a lot of emotional baggage. And when you sense you're dealing with that type of person, I think that the arguments and the evidence become really quite secondary, and more pastoral concerns emerge to the fore. But this book is on the argumentative issues and how to answer some of the tough criticisms that secularists offer of the Christian faith.
And I hope people will avail themselves of this resource at reasonablefaith.org. Let me just mention in closing that we try to offer as many things as possible for free at reasonablefaith.org. And to continue doing this, we need some partners who will help us financially. If you benefit from the many things available at Reasonable Faith, then please consider a financial gift to us. Gifts of all sizes keep us expanding and presenting an intelligent response to the big questions of life. Just click on Donate on the front page of reasonablefaith.org. I'm Kevin Harris. On behalf of Dr. Craig, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.